Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
It's here, y'all. March Madness. And not just March Madness, but today on the Nothing But Net with W. Antonelli, we're going to get into a little mid-major magic in March Madness. Try saying those M's three times fast. In today's episode, we are welcoming in four representatives from four different mid-majors that made the NCAA tournament field of 64. All headed to Texas, all ready to take on whatever challenges is in front of them. And these four representatives will be telling you about each of their schools, what players to look out for, what kind of style of play they run. Everything you're going to need to know in case you just happen to not know much about these four schools, this is the episode for you. Joining us, we have Jacqueline Parton, who is a co-host on the Pardon Me Alex podcast, which centers around Stephen F. Austin basketball. And she is here to talk about Stephen F. Austin women's basketball team, winners of the Southland Conference. We also have Christine Mata, who is a Delaware radio announcer, but since they are in the Colonial Athletic Association and Delaware was upset in the first round of that tournament, she is here to talk about the CAA's tournament winner, Drexel. We also have Danny Kluppinger, who is here to talk about Stony Brook. Danny is a sports broadcaster who's out on the West Coast right now in LA, and she is a former player at Stony Brook. She's here to tell you all about their team. And lastly, Daryl Trujillo, who works with England Sports and is a senior writer for Wax Hoops Digest. And he is here to talk about the WAC representative, Utah Valley, and give you all you need to know about that team. Telling you, if you're ready to fill out your brackets, this is the episode for you. These are four teams that you, like I said, you may not know much about. And these four representatives are going to give you all the good stuff, all the information you need to make the correct decisions and picking those mid-major upsets. It's here, y'all. March Madness. Let's get it started. Here's Debbie.
Jacqueline Parton is going to help us break down Stephen F. Austin. Jacqueline, thank you so much for being with us on Nothing But Net.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so tell us something about Stephen F. Austin. Break it down for us. Give us the scoop.
So it's a really exciting year for us this year. This is the first time in 15 years that we have made, our ladies have made the tournament. So our head coach, Coach Kellogg, really excited for him. We've had a stellar season, even considering COVID and all the struggles there. We finished with a perfect record in conference, 14-0. And then, of course, had to win our conference tournament for the automatic bid. So we came up against our conference rivals in the championship game of our tournament. So it was a nice win to beat them as well, to get that auto bid. So,
Jacqueline, tell us who the best players are and why Stephen F. Austin might have a chance to advance in the bracket over Georgia Tech.
So, well, first I want to make a note. It's really interesting that we're coming up against Georgia Tech anyway, because their head coach, Nell Fortner, actually started her collegiate coaching career at SFA. So she started out as a grad assistant in 86, and after 1 year moved up to assistant coach. So that'll be a really neat dynamic to see. But we have a really strong team. So we had three of our players make conference teams within our conference. So we have Stephanie Vischer, who made first team in our conference. We had Ayanna Johnson and Zaya Nugent, who both made second team in our conference. And then Ayanna and Stephanie both made the all defensive team. So we just have a really strong group. We have two sisters on the team. We have a freshman who's just really had a breakout season. Lots of defense, lots of really disciplined offense, several good three-point shooters. So it'll be interesting. We play pretty scrappy. So
Georgia Tech has a center inside called, her name is Lorella Kubai. She's a senior. She's 6'4", and she's one of the toughest competitors I've ever seen. They've got a great three-point shooter and good guard play. What is one of the things that Stephen F. Austin will have to do to be able to beat the higher seed?
I think we're just going to have to stick to what we've been doing. So the last few years, we've finished near the top of our conference, and then we get to the conference tournament, which for us, we have to win that to get the auto bid, and seems we kind of lose steam towards the end. So I think we just really have to focus on what got us to this point, and we had such a strong season. We took a big regular season or preseason win against Auburn on the road. So I think we just have to stick to what we're doing, stick to the gritty defense, and hope that our shots fall.
Last question for you, Jacqueline. What kind of pace should we anticipate? What kind of defensive style of play is there? So pace and defensive style, what would you say?
I'd say pretty fast-paced. We like to press. We like to get up in your face. We like to try to get the five-second call. So I think it's going to be very fast and man-to-man and tough. Or a matchup zone, you know.
Jacqueline Pardon breaking down Stephen F. Austin for us. Stephen F. Austin, the 12 seed, will take on the 5 seed Georgia Tech in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Thank you so much, Jacqueline.
Thanks.
Next up on Nothing But Net in our breakdown of the first round of the NCAA tournament, we have Christine Mata, who is going to talk about the Colonial Athletic Association, the CAA, where Drexel is the 14 seed, taking on Georgia, the 3 seed, in the upper left portion of your bracket. I don't know what that's called, and I'm not going to go by all those names the NCAA uses, Christine. We're just going to talk about Drexel, okay? So break it down for us. Give us a little scout. Like, what do we have to be watching for when we watch Drexel play?
Well, I think when you talk about Drexel, you have to think about two players. You know, you can't just say they have one great player, but they have two really good players. And one plays a lot bigger than her stature, and that is 5'3" Hannah Nihill. She was actually the defensive player of the year in the CAA conference. She averages about 16 points per game. She has 63 steals in only 22 games. She is an absolute thorn in the side of any guard that she has the opportunity to get into it with. And then you have Keshawna Washington, who was the most improved player in the CAA last year, exploded in the CAA tournament this year, had 38 in the semifinal, and then 30 in the upset win over Delaware. She has been one of the players that has improved the most in the CAA conference. I'm really looking forward to seeing these two players get their chance at the NCAA tournament.
So Christine, you've been around for a little bit. You played at Delaware. You work for the Big East Network. You break down Delaware's game, so you know the CAA. What about Georgia in this matchup? What do you see as a way for Drexel to win? What do they have to do to upset the top seed?
Well, the biggest thing is they need to keep this game in the low 60s. Drexel does a great job all year. They've kept opponents to about 57 points per game. They can force teams to play ugly. Now, they don't play a lot of players. They don't have a very deep bench, but they shoot the ball really well. They move well without the basketball. They set screens, read screens. You have to be really worried about those flare screens up top. If you don't get on the line up the line and jump the ball on those passes, they're going to make you look pretty silly.
Well, that's interesting because Georgia is definitely an up the line overplaying defense, very aggressive, very physical. So how do you see Drexel being able to score?
Yeah, I think you'll see a lot of movement. You'll see a lot of slips. You'll see a lot of back doors, but it's not just that initial pass. They move the ball well. They are a true team. This isn't a team that has that one star player that's going to take over the game every game. They have multiple players that'll step up on any given night. They shoot the ball so well. If you don't get over top of that screen at the three-point line, they don't need much room to get that shot off.
What would be a weakness for Drexel that might hamper their ability to knock off Georgia?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. You know, with this Drexel team, they can go through shooting droughts. When they're on, they're on. They shot 70% in the fourth quarter against Delaware. They shot 51% for the game. However, if they're not shooting well, they go through those droughts. They're not a very good rebounding team. So if they don't get, they don't typically get those second chance points. And they also have a small bench. So if they get into foul trouble, even like they did against Delaware in that CA championship, Mariah Leonard, Kate Connolly went out in the second quarter. That's when Delaware made their run, went up 9 at halftime. But then Drexel came storming back in the third. Amy Mallon also does a great job of making halftime adjustments. So this is a gritty team. This is a true underdog story. But they're not afraid of anybody.
You bring up Amy Mallon, the head coach's name. Is she a candidate for the Maggie Dixon Rookie Coach of the Year Award?
I mean, I can't see how she isn't. You know, it was in some ways for this team devastating when Denise Dillon left to take over that Villanova Wildcat squad. But everybody kind of knew that's where her heart always was. And she was going to end up there when Harry Perretta, well, you know, decided to retire. But she was loyal. She was faithful for those 17 years with Denise Dillon. She got her opportunity. And this team plays so hard for her. Definitely has her own style. She's not a very vocal coach. She's not going to run up and down those sidelines. She has a quiet composure about herself, but I can't see a coach who has been more impressive, quite honestly, in the CAA, but also on the national stage.
Christine Mata, thank you so much for breaking it down for us. Christine Mata giving us a little rundown and a scout of the Colonial Athletic Association conference champion Drexel, who will take on the 3 seed Georgia in the upper left-hand side of your bracket. Christine, we're going to have you back. You're a good friend to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Debbie. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Danny Kleppinger, another friend to the podcast. Danny, Nothing But Net welcomes you and your breakdown of the America East champion, Stony Brook. And you played for Stony Brook, but you live in SoCal, so this ought to be really fun. All right, so give us your take on Stony Brook and their chances to advance in the NCAA tournament. They're a 14 seed. They're in the lower right-hand portion of your bracket, taking on the 3 seed Arizona.
Well, first and foremost, thanks for having me. And I'm excited to get to talk to you about Stony Brook making it to the NCAA tournament, because back when I played, that was something we could only dream about. We weren't that good. So it's exciting to see this school be able to go to their first NCAA tournament in Division I history, which is very exciting for us as an alum and for the conference in general. Stony Brook's a great team. And I think what stands out first and foremost is their defense. They were second in the nation in scoring defense going into the conference tournament. So all year long, they kept teams just right above 50 points a game. And I think that that's a really strong suit going into the tournament. They are a tough rebounding team, but if I'm going to be honest, they are short. They're a much smaller team than Arizona. I think the tallest player on Stony Brook is 6'1". So while I do know that they are told and it's really grinded into their minds that they need to crash the boards, it's going to be a little bit tougher task going against Arizona, the 3 seed, which much taller players for sure. But they're led by Asia Dingle. She's a Kent State transfer. She was phenomenal in the championship game. She didn't get to play much in the first half of that game due to foul trouble, but as soon as she got back in there in the second half and scored 20 points, which was major. She lost her father, unfortunately, early on in the year after the first game or the day of the first game. And so she's playing with not only a team that's very motivated because they wanted to get to this game last year, but she's got a guardian angel on her shoulder, you know, guiding her through this season. And you can tell she's playing with a whole lot of passion. And then you've got different players on the team that can contribute. And I think that that's where they could maybe make a little bit of noise, because if you give Asia Dingle too much freedom, she's going to make you pay. But if you just take her out of it, there's other people like Annie Warren that can step up. We saw her score over 30 points in that championship game. Mackenzie Bushy was the 6th man of the year in the conference. So they have her as well. And Haley Zeese was on the all defensive team. So she's going to make that defensive presence that I talked about a little bit earlier, but also someone that didn't do too much in that championship game that definitely deserves to be mentioned is India Pagan. She is a forward. She's that one of those undersized post players I was telling you about, 6'1", but she's a 1,000-point scorer in her career at Stony Brook. And that was someone that, you know, if you go back and watch the film, maybe you don't see too much of her in that championship game at the America East had. So maybe when Arizona sees her, they maybe underestimate her a little bit, and hopefully Coach McCombs can get her some buckets.
So, Danny, with Arizona, you've got Ari McDonald, one of the fastest players with the ball in the country, a really good defender, probably a candidate for National Defensive Player of the Year. You got Kate Reese in the middle, and you got a pretty strong senior nucleus there. What kind of pace will Stony Brook need to play? You're talking about a fast, athletic team against a team that you said is second in the nation in scoring D. What do you see?
I think they got to do something to try and slow her down, right? Which isn't exactly a way that Stony Brook really likes to play. I think, you know, when you go into a tournament, maybe you try to play your game, but I think in this situation in particular, you gotta slow down Arizona's guards, and you gotta slow down fast and not let them get out and run in transition. And that's something that Maine likes to do, which I guess is obviously a much different team than Arizona. But Maine is who they prepared for coming into that championship game. Maine was the top seed in the conference, and they like to push the ball, and Stony Brook slowed them down. Now, like I said, I'm aware this is a much different pace we're going to talk about here, especially coming from the Pac-12. I grew up on the West Coast, so I'm a big Pac-12 fan. One of my former teammates growing up is on the coaching staff at Arizona. I know that she's going to hold her team to a super high standard, but I do think Stony Brook could, if they could try and slow them down and slow them down early, maybe throw a zone in there a little bit, maybe try and just slow the pace, maybe just put some dummy defense on the press, maybe not press exactly, but just throw a couple people up there just to slow that initial dribble down a little bit. I think they could have some success in slowing them down.
As an alum of Stony Brook, how excited are you about the future of the program and the job that Caroline McCombs has done?
My goodness, it gives me chills. Yeah, she's done such a great job. And it does. It gives me chills. I was sitting right here. I have my Stony Brook jersey hanging in my living room. And a lot of people in Southern California don't know of Stony Brook, haven't heard of Stony Brook. And I've always been such a proud alum of there. But now to see their name up in the brackets, it really does. It gives me chills. And like I said, they should have been in this game last year. They won the regular season last year, worked so hard, and then the pandemic hit. And you don't get a chance to play in that conference tournament to try your chances at the big dance. So I think it's extremely cool that they were able to get back to that game, get back into this situation. And it's a big credit to Coach McCombs. She's a great person. And I think the biggest thing when I talk to a lot of those players and talk to her, the biggest thing that stands out to me is that they love her. I don't think you see that a lot in college basketball, where your team really truly respects you and sees you as a part of their family. I think that's the ultimate goal, but let's be honest, it doesn't happen all the time. And I think she's done just a tremendous job with that team and growing that chemistry moving forward. It makes me very excited.
Well, Danny, thank you so much, Danny Kloppinger, for breaking down the America East champion, Stony Brook. You're a proud alum, and we're proud to have you as a new friend of Nothing But Net. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me.
We just keep rolling along with Nothing But Net and Daryl Trujillo, who is a writer for Inland Sports, is going to tell us about the WAC, and he's going to represent Utah Valley, who is the 16th seed, taking on the overall number one seed, Stanford, in the NCAA tournament. Your upper left-hand portion of your bracket, if you're following along, it's Stanford at Utah Valley. Daryl, thank you so much for contributing to Nothing But Net.
Not a problem, Debbie. Thank you for all you do for the women's game.
Well, listen, man, this was your idea, so I want to give props where it comes from. I mean, I think this is brilliant. The other people we've had on it have been terrific in breaking down their team. So tell us about the WAC.
So Utah Valley is actually our number two team from the regular season. CBU, California Baptist University, won both the regular season championship and the tournament championship, but they're ineligible to go to the NCAA tournament as a result of the transition to Division I. At a meeting earlier in the spring, the coaches voted that the number two team from the regular season would get the WAC auto bid to the tournament. And in this case, that ended up being Utah Valley, who played two more games than Grand Canyon, or has two more wins than Grand Canyon. They both had four losses in conference play.
Tell us about Utah Valley. Who are the people that we need to watch? Who's their best player, and what could they do against Stanford?
This is going to be a tough draw for Utah Valley. They're not very deep. Four of their five starters are in the top 10 in the WAC in minutes played. Player to watch will be 6'3" Josie Williams, all WAC first team, all WAC tournament selection. solid post player. I think her ability to finish down low will be key to Stanford's success in this one. But the other thing to watch for is going to be how Utah Valley handles whatever pressure Stanford puts on them. They struggled against Grand Canyon in the WAC semifinals against the GCU pressure. The GCU turned them over, I believe it was 23 or 24 times in a three-point loss. So those are the two really big things to watch. Williams down low and the Utah Valley guards against the pressure.
Daryl, I know you have a story about how you got involved in the women's game. Tell us what it is.
So, yeah, my background is rather unique. I was a high school scorekeeper for the varsity girls team at my school for 4 years while I was in school, and then another 6 or 7 after graduating. We went to a couple of elite, you know, final quarterfinals. Just that's how I got my appreciation for the girls' game, the women's game, was that, and then the Sweet 16 University of Delaware team.
Tell me about that Sweet 16 University of Delaware team. We just had Christine Mata on telling us about Drexel. That league's pretty tough.
Oh, yeah. The CAA is one of the best mid-major leagues in the country. Probably one of the top 7 to 10 would be my guess if you were to rank mid-major leagues. That Sweet 16 team was Alana Deladon, Kayla Miller, Lauren Carraw. That was a fun team to watch, and that's, like I said, I was watching them from out here in Southern California, so 3-hour time difference every game, getting up and turning on Christine and her partner Matt on the radio, or watching them on Blue Hen All Access on YouTube, where they merge the radio call with the video. Fun times.
That's pretty exciting. I always love to hear people's story on how they got involved in the game. So we're talking about Utah Valley against Stanford. What do you see in Stanford that you really like as their chance to win the whole thing?
Stanford is just solid all the way around. They'll give people problems defensively. They scored at a high enough of a clip to just beat people. I mean, if one thing's not working, then the other will. And I love what Tara Vanderveer has done with this group. I've only seen Stanford play one and maybe a half times this year, but I was pretty impressed with what I saw, and I feel like they were the worthy number one overall seed. I think the committee got it right.
Daryl, thank you so much for joining us on Nothing But Net to share with us about the WAC and about the Stanford-Utah Valley 1 versus 16 seed. It's Daryl Trujillo with Inland Sports. Daryl, thank you.
Thanks, Debbie. Have a good night.